This is where the apostle makes this statement that has been our touchstone for this year. So let's all repeat this together. It should be up here on the screen for you. Thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brothers and sisters, be firm, immovable, always excelling in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. So today I'd like to begin to think about some of the habits that the Holy Spirit teaches us to help us to overcome, to help us to be firm, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. In 1 Peter, the third chapter, Peter asks what I think is a really probing question. He says, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy living and godliness? Now, he prefaces that by saying the heavens and the earth are going to be destroyed. So he says, in light of that, what kind of people should you be? And that's what we're going to talk about. Today, we're going to talk about learning how to overcome greed by practicing a habit of contentment. And it comes from a statement that the Hebrew writer makes. He says, be free from the love of money. Be content with such things as you have. You know, we were reading in the book of Ecclesiastes this morning, and one of the things that the Solomon figure says in Ecclesiastes is work, enjoy the work that you do, and be content with that. There's a lot of value in that. We'll try to expand that idea. So let's think about what greed really is. Greed is just the desire to have more. And more can be defined in a lot of different ways. But I think a couple of examples in the Old Testament will help us to understand that. In Joshua, the seventh chapter, beginning at verse 20 and reading down through verse 21, you read about an event that happened when the people of Israel went in to take Jericho. Now, Achan was one of the people in Israel. Joshua is the leader. Achan is, I guess you would probably call him a soldier. But Achan didn't do what God wanted him to do. They had been told, when you go in to take Jericho, don't take their stuff. Burn it. Achan didn't do that. Achan took some of the stuff. And because Achan had taken some of the stuff, Israel began to suffer. They went out to do the next battle, and they were soundly defeated. And so everybody is saying, wait, what's up with this? We did so well at Jericho, and now here we're defeated by a smaller army. Well, Joshua, the seventh chapter, is a record of the conversation between Achan and Joshua about what Achan has done, and you get to hear Achan's explanation. Achan answered Joshua. He said, of a truth, I have sinned against Jehovah, the God of Israel. Thus and thus have I done. When I saw among the spoil a goodly Babylonish mantle and 200 shekels of silver, a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight, I coveted them. I wanted it. I took them. Behold, they're hidden in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver is under it. Well, what does it mean when Joshua says, I coveted them? We think of coveting in a rather benign way. We covet something. But to covet at its root in the old Hebrew language is to want something that's pleasant out of a desire or a lust. Why did Achan want this so badly? Was it because he needed it to pay for his family? Did he need it to buy food? Did he need it to make repairs on his camel? That wasn't it. The odd part about it was Achan took the stuff that he saw in Jericho and he took it back to his tent and he put it in the ground. He hid it. He didn't use it. And from that, I conclude that Achan took what he didn't need. There was a time in our country, I suppose, when people worked hard. They lived well because they worked hard and they weren't ashamed of it. And there were people even then who had a lot of money, had a lot of assets, but those assets were from ill-gotten escapades, or the assets were ill-gotten. They were based on greedy escapades. They didn't want anybody to know that they had that. Now, maybe we've gotten past that point in our culture, and now people steal, and when they steal, they hold it up for the world to see. You know, you probably watched the videos of people ransacking department stores, and they come out and they smile. They hold up the things that they've stolen as if they're proud of it. They want the world to see it. There was a time when we did that, but we kept it secret. Or maybe it didn't exist, and I just wish that it had existed. But anyway, Achan took what he didn't need. He coveted it. He wanted it. It was just greed. That's all it was. Look at 2 Kings, the 5th chapter. This is a case of Gehazi. Now, Gehazi is the servant of Elisha. Elisha is the man of God. He's a prophet. And Gehazi is his servant. Elisha tells Naaman how to be cleansed of leprosy. And leprosy was an awful disease. So Naaman, of course, is thankful that he has been cleansed of leprosy, and he wants to give a payment to Elisha. So he brings this wonderful payment. Elisha says, no, I don't want this. I don't need it. It's not mine. I didn't cure you. God did. But Gehazi, his servant, who hears all of this going on between Elisha and Naaman, waits until Naaman leaves, and then he chases Naaman down. And he says, you know, all that stuff you were going to give Elisha, let's rethink this here. Well, let's see how the text describes it. Gehazi, the servant of Elijah, this is in 2 Kings 5, the man of God, said, behold, my master has spared this Naaman the Syrian in not receiving at his hands that which he brought, as Jehovah liveth. I will turn after him. I will take somewhat of him. So Gehazi followed Naaman, and when Naaman saw someone running after him, he alighted from his chariot to meet him, and he said, is all well? He said, all is well. My master has sent me. My master said, behold, even now there are come to me from the hill country of Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changers of raiment. Gehazi is not saying it's for me. If my master sent me because this new need has arisen and you can help him meet this need. Naaman said, be pleased to take 2 talents. And he urged him, and he bound 2 talents of silver in 2 bags with 2 changes of raiment. And he laid them on 2 of his servants, and they bare them before him. When he came to the hill, he took them from their hand. He bound and bestowed them in the house. Did exactly what Achan had done. He took it back home and he buried it. He didn't want anybody to know that he had it. He let the men go. They departed. He went in. He stood before his master. And Elisha said to him, whence comest thou, Gehazi? Gehazi said, I didn't go anywhere. They lied. It's obvious he's lying. He's gone after Naaman, and he's taken what Naaman offered to Gehazi, not by a legitimate means, but he lied about these 2 servants or these 2 sons of the prophets that have now come to Elisha. And Elisha has rethought the situation. Now he needs the money so he can give it to these 2 servants. No, that's not what Gehazi did. Gehazi wanted to keep it for himself. It's not for me. It's for those other prophets. Right? It's a shame. So these things are hidden. 1 Kings, the 21st chapter, beginning at verse 1. This is a record of Ahab, who is the king of Samaria, and he wants to buy a field, or he wants a field that belongs to Naboth. Naboth is a regular guy. He's just going about his business. It came to pass after these things, 1 Kings, the 21st chapter, that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, the king of Samaria. So it's right next door. Ahab spoke to Naboth. He said, give me thy vineyard that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it's near my house. I will give you a better vineyard for it. Or if it seem good to thee, I'll give thee the worth of it in money. So Naboth said to Ahab, Jehovah forbid it me that I should give thee the inheritance of, my fathers unto thee. Ahab came to his house heavy and displeased because of the word that Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, I'll not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. He lay down upon his bed, turned away his face, and would eat no bread. Ahab the king pouted. That's just the best word for it. He pouted because he couldn't have what he wanted. He's the king. He's not used to this. In Ecclesiastes, the 4th chapter, you see the conclusion of the whole matter. Greed is in the heart that's not set on following the Spirit of God. It's not seeking to be led by the Spirit of God. Ecclesiastes, the 4th chapter, beginning at verse 8. One of my very favorite passages in all of the Bible. In fact, it's a passage that we read in our wedding. There's one that is alone. He hath not a second. Yea, he hath neither son nor brother, but there's no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. For whom saith he, do I labor and deprive my soul of good? It's vanity. It's a sore travail. There's just heaven. But this man says, I just want. That's greed. That's all it is. So what habit would the Spirit lead us to so that we could know this change of heart and we would be able to overcome greed by practicing contentment? Well, it's Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Be free from the love of money. Content yourself with such things as you have. Contentment in the heart, when it's set on following God, is really easy. Philippians, the fourth chapter. The Apostle Paul makes this statement about himself, about all of the things that he has learned. He says, I have learned in whatever state I am, therein to be content. I know how to be abased or to have very little. I know how to abound in everything and in all things. I have learned the secret, both to be filled and to be hungry, both to abound and to be in want. Here's the secret. I can do all things in him who strengthens me. Look at Job, the first chapter. We'll begin reading at verse 13. It's a fairly long reading. Job is one of these people who had a great deal. He was a very wealthy man. And suddenly he didn't have it. On a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their elder brother's house, there came a messenger to Job, and he said, the oxen were plowing, the asses were feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell upon them, took them away. Yea, they have even slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another. He said, the fire of God has fallen from heaven and it burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. I only am escaped to tell thee. Job's losses start to mount. While he was yet speaking, second servant, there came also another and said, the Chaldeans made made three bands and fell upon the camels and have taken them away and have slain all the servants with the edge of the sword. And I only am escaped to tell thee. Fourth servant comes in. While he was yet speaking, there came also another. Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their elder brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness, smote the four corners of the house. It fell upon them. They're all dead, and I only am escaped to tell thee. Job went from abounding to abased. Job arose, rent his robe, shaved his head, fell down on the ground and worshiped. That's an incredible response to everything that's been happening. Four messengers, four terrible bits of news. Everything Job has is gone. So he worshiped. And he said this, naked came I out of my mother's womb, naked shall I return thither. Jehovah gave, Jehovah hath taken away. Blessed be the name of Jehovah. I can have a lot. I can have nothing. It doesn't matter. That's contentment. Matthew, the 8th chapter, verse 20. People were coming to Jesus. They wanted to follow him. This is early in Jesus' ministry. His ministry is still growing. He's very popular. One man came to him. He said, I want to follow you. Jesus said, the foxes have holes. The birds of the heaven have nests. The Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. Here I am. I'm just an itinerant preacher. I don't even have a place to sleep. And you want to follow me. you're going to have to set your heart on the Spirit, because that's what it takes. Matthew, the 16th chapter. Another time, this is later in Jesus' ministry when his ministry has begun to fall apart. People are beginning to leave him in droves. And he said to his disciples, if any man would come after me, let him deny himself. Remember what greed is? Greed is just wanting more. He said, let him deny himself. Take up his cross, follow me. Whoever would save his life will lose it. Whosoever should lose his life for my sake will find it. What shall a man be profited if he shall gain the whole world and forfeit his life? What will a man give in exchange for his soul? It's a matter of thinking about those things, well, the things that really matter. 1 Corinthians, the 7th chapter. In verse 21, beginning, Paul gives us this. He says, were you called being a bondservant? Care not for it. You become a Christian as a slave? Doesn't matter. So you're a slave. If you can, become free and use it. There's the key. If you can become free, use it. He that was called in the Lord being a bondservant is the Lord's freeman. Likewise, he that is called being free is Christ's bondservant. You're bought with a price. Become not the bondservants of men. Brethren, let each man wherein he was called, therein abide with God. A lot of things that we think matter that don't. And that's really the key to commitment, or to contentment. But contentment doesn't mean laziness. If you can become free, then do it. Use it. This idea of contentment, the heart that's set on the Spirit of God, you know, it's a matter of progress, isn't it? We all have to start by taking some baby steps. Luke, the 12th chapter, beginning at verse 13. This is where we'll conclude. And we'll see how Jesus describes this process of growing into contentment. One of the multitude said to him, Teacher, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me. So there was an inheritance, and apparently one of the brothers had kept it all. He says, tell him to divide it with me. Jesus said to him, man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? He said to them, take heed, keep yourself from all covetousness. A man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesses. And I might add, from another place, he said, even when he possesses a lot. Luke, the 12th chapter, will continue. He spake a parable to him. The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. He reasoned with himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have not where to bestow my goods or my fruits. He said, this I'll do. I'll pull down my barns, build greater, and there I will bestow all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, foolish one, this night thy soul is required of thee. The things that you've prepared, whose shall they be? Well, Solomon answered that question for us this morning. You don't know. So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. He said to his disciples, therefore I say unto you, be not anxious for your life, what you shall eat, nor yet for your body, what you shall put on. For the life is more than food, the body more than raiment. Which of us doesn't believe that? And which of us has a hard time keeping our belief in that statement? Your life is more than food, the body is more than raiment. Consider the ravens, they sow not, neither do they reap, which have no strong chamber nor barn, but God feeds them. Of how much more value are ye than the birds? Which of you, by being anxious, can add a cubit to the measure of his life? If then you're not able to do even that which is least, why are you anxious concerning the rest? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. Yet I say to you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. God doth so clothe the grass in the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven. How much more shall he clothe you, O ye of little faith? It's a matter of progress. After all these things do the nations of the world seek after, but our Father knows that you have need of these things. God knows. God cares. Remember, we studied the end of Romans, the 8th chapter. If God gave his son, what makes you think he's not going to take care of you? If God was willing to do that, he'll take care of you. Seek his kingdom. These things will be added to you. My little, fear not, little flock. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell that which you have. Give alms. Make for yourselves purses which wax not old, and a treasure that faileth not, where neither thief draweth near, neither moth destroyeth, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Sell what you have, give alms. That's in contradistinction to, I want this, I'll bury it in my house just because I want it. I want to be free. I'm a slave now. I want to be free. Paul says, that's a good thing. Use it. Give alms. We can overcome greed. The Spirit teaches us some habits. And it takes a lot of effort to make those habits real in our lives. But we want you to think about it. Are you tired of being caught up in a rat race? Just wanting to get stuff that you don't need and you won't use? How many of us have a junk drawer that's full of stuff that we thought we needed and we bought it and now it's never going to get used? Well, that's greed. I don't think we want to go there. I think we want to be with God. We want to be led by the Spirit of God. We want to know this contentment. Put on Jesus. He's the key. If you put him on, he'll forgive you of your sins. You'll be one of his. He'll provide for you. We want to help you do that. Put him on in baptism. If you've had trouble kind of hanging on to this habit, you have bits and snatches where you're doing pretty well, and then you have times when you kind of fall off the wagon, return. He'll forgive. He wants to forgive in the worst possible way. That's what we want you to think about.